Well, next, private passions. And to tie in with the Free Thinking Festival this weekend at Sage Gateshead, Michael Barclay's guest hails from the northeast, the Northumbrian piper and composer Catherine Tickell.
Catherine Tickell is rooted in the remote hill farms of Northumbria. Her grandparents were shepherds, and she grew up playing the Northumbrian pipes and fiddle at village dances. By the age of just 16, she was the official piper to the Lord Mayor of Newcastle and had released her first album. 19 more were to follow. She was the first folk performer at the Proms, was named Musician of the Year at the Radio 2 Folk Awards last year, not for the first time, and holds the Queen's Medal for Music. She has done more than any other musician to preserve the rich musical heritage of the northeast of England. What strikes me, Catherine, is how very early this all started, almost as if you had a sort of sense of destiny as a child. Because when you were 8 or 9, I think you used to go around with a tape recorder capturing voices and tunes.
Maybe a little bit later than that, but certainly around about that time. I think I was just brought up with the music, and my dad sings, so he was singing all the songs of the area. But also, I think maybe you have to understand, in my case, a little bit of the community that I was from and that my family were from, where, you know, my granddad used to love reciting poetry. That he wasn't an educated man in terms of schooling, but he certainly was very self-educated. And he would record himself reciting poems and things like that. And also my other granddad, who won one of his prizes in the local leek show one year. He was 28th, I seem to remember, and he won this big double cassette deck thing. And he would also, he didn't play anything, but he would record, maybe if he woke up in the middle of the night and he remembered a tune that he didn't think that I would know, he would get up in the middle of the night and press play and record, and record himself whistling the tune into the cassette player and make me tapes of things like that. So this way of using cassettes was very common for me.
When you went out to meet sort of fiddlers and pipers, where did you find them and how did they react to you?
Well, I was related to quite a few of them, so that was easy. But also my granddad Robson, he was the one, he didn't play, but he was very much part of that whole, there's certain families in Northumberland, you know, that are associated with certain areas, and the Robsons were very much associated and have been for hundreds and hundreds of years with North Tynedale, Reedsdale, that sort of area. So my granddad knew everybody. So there are some of the old fiddle players that, had I not been Matt Robson's granddaughter, they probably wouldn't have been so friendly. But because I went there with him and he took me, it was like, oh, you're Matt and Mary's granddaughter. Come away in, have a cup of tea. You know, what do you want to know? And that made a difference.
I thought it'd be lovely to hear a little bit of your music. But before we do, just explain for those people that are not sure exactly what the Northumbrian pipes are, what the beast is.
Ah, well, it's a type of bagpipe, obviously, but it's not mouth-blown. So, you know, if you're imagining the Scottish bagpipes, it's not like that. The air comes from a set of bellows, little set of bellows, which is strapped around your waist. And the sound is very different to the Scottish pipes. It's a purer, clearer sound, very much quieter as well. It's an indoor instrument, really.
It's a very beautiful instrument. But and you work the bellows yourself with your arms.
Yes, so the right arm is working the bellows, the left arm is keeping a steady pressure on the bag, which is like the air reservoir. And then you've got the chanter, which plays the tune, and the drones, which drone.
Well, let's hear you in action. This is The Wedding. Tell us about it.
Oh, well, this was a tune I was asked to write for somebody's wedding. It was as simple as that.
Music from The Wedding, the Northumbrian pipes played by my guest today, Catherine Tickell. I suspect, Catherine, you really hate labels in music because you play all kinds of music, don't you?
I do. I come from a very specific tradition and that is what informs everything that I do, but I listen to lots of things.
And you've worked with people like Sting, and I think you've been working more recently with a cellist from the Royal Northern Symphonia.
That's right, yes. Yeah,
Louisa Tuck.
She is fantastic, yes.
So what have you been doing with her?
Well, I've put a new band together, a new ensemble, which really is a little bit different to the bands that I've had in the past, which have always come from the folk scene. But with this band, for me, it's never about, as you say, it's never about the type of music or the genres or the categories. It's about musicians. And sometimes you just find musicians that maybe on the surface of it don't play the same sort of thing as you, but you just know that there's something there and you want to work with them and you need to work with them. And that's how it was with Louisa. So very classical cellist, fantastic player. And then with the pipes, and then we added piano accordion, Amy Thatcher, who also does clog dancing. So that is kind of the opposite of the classical cello side of things. And then there's also harp.
So a huge range of traditions within the band.
There are. And one of the best things about that is when you're actually travelling and you get to listen to what all the other band members have got on their iPods. And I have to say, it's not always what you would expect.
And you rather like using, and so do your musicians, the shuffle button, don't you?
Yes, yes.
Tell me what you like about that.
Because I like so many different types of music, like on my iPod, there's all sorts. It can be quite embarrassing, actually, if you've got it on random play. You've got no idea what might come out. But also, I love the way that it, even music that you thought you knew, sometimes when you get it out of context and you get a track of, you know, maybe traditional folk song, but because of the track that you heard before it and the track that you heard after it, suddenly it throws a completely different slant on it and you realise how many preconceptions you have. When you listen to music, you bring your own expectations to it. So sometimes things come up on your iPod and they start and you go, oh, I love this, what is it? And then it gets further and you go, oh, actually, I didn't love this, I don't like this. Yeah. Except I do, suddenly, now that I didn't know what it was. And that's really fascinating to me.
Well, you've brought a wonderfully varied playlist for us today. I mean, first off, music in the English folk tradition. But this is music that actually really surprised you when you heard it.
For me, as a traditional folk musician, I never thought in terms of an English tradition. Folk music is inherently regional. So my music, the music I was brought up with, is from Northumberland and the Borders. I was familiar with Scottish music, Irish music, different English traditions. They're something I've grown to know. I wasn't brought up with them. And when I first heard the music of Percy Grainger, I think I must have heard, when I was a kid, I think I heard Country Gardens or something like that, and kind of wrote it off as being, you know, a pastiche of English folk tunes. And I think a lot of people think this about Percy Grainger, you know, a bit trite perhaps, you know. And then many years later, quite by chance, I heard it was Shepherd's Hay, which is, you know, it's a very well-known tune in the English tradition. And I'd heard it played by quite a lot of pretty bad melodeon players over the years for Morris dancing. And I've always hated the tune, to be honest. It's not a tune that I would ever play. It's not part of my background and I didn't really like the tune anyway. And then I heard Percy Grainger's arrangement of Shepherd's Hay. And I don't know why I didn't switch it off at the beginning, but I didn't. And I remember I was in the car and it was this minute and a half of absolute madness. But taking such a very basic tune, I think that's what I loved about it as well, that it took such a basic tune that I wouldn't have necessarily chosen to play. And yet he, with his quirkiness and inventiveness and eccentricities and humour and a little bit of aggression as well, transformed it into something quite astonishing. And I remember being in the car and Shepherd's Hay finished, and this is probably completely against all driving laws, but I cheered and clapped and I applauded. I was on my own in the car, found myself cheering at the end of this track. I couldn't believe it. So I really wanted today to be able to play Shepherd's Hay, and this is the version which actually has Percy Grainger himself playing the piano on it. But before that, to have something of the other side, the more lyrical side of Percy Grainger's writing, which is a beautiful arrangement of Early One Morning, another English folk song.
Thank you.
quite anarchic, isn't it?
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Shepherd's Hay, and before that we heard Early One Morning, performed by Leopold Stokowski and his symphony orchestra. Percy Grainger, transforming old folk tunes. And I think, Catherine, you've been involved with what you might describe as a kind of reverse translation, haven't you?
Yes. I curated a prom of Percy Grainger's music, particularly his music, the folk song arrangements. And as part of that, I played with my band. And it's happened so many times over the years. You know, classical composers come in and they take a beautiful folk tune and they go away with it and they orchestrate it and harmonise it and then put it out to the world. And all the folkies are going, well, you know, that's very nice, but actually that tune was very nice before you even touched it, you know. And there's a little bit of, bit of that going on. So what we decided to do was to take the tunes that Percy Grainger had stolen, if you like, from the folk tradition, but we would steal them back, but not from the folk tradition that we come from, but actually from him. So what I tried to do was, I actually took both of those tunes, Early One Morning and Shepherd's Hay, neither of which are tunes that are from my tradition that I would have chosen to play otherwise. But because of what Percy Grainger did with them, I took his inventiveness as my starting point and tried to take them back to be played by folk musicians, but through the veil of Grainger and his particularly his harmonic invention. It was really interesting, actually. It was a great challenge for me, and it has changed the way that I compose, and it's opened my eyes a bit.
So, in a way, you were allowing yourself to be influenced by his philosophy as much as anything, his philosophy of kind of, you know, freeing things up, looking at them from a different angle altogether.
Yes.
I think, actually, the Early One Morning is on your new CD, isn't it?
It is, yes. So, thank you, Percy.
But what you want to play us now is something which I think really will surprise people, because he was an innovator in more ways than one.
Yes.
And in terms of pure sound, too.
Well, I think a lot of people don't realise about Percy Grainger that how much of an inventor he was. I mean, he was inventing all sorts of things. He was inventing whole lines of clothing, never mind music. But he was so interested in pushing the boundaries and exploring what could be done with composition and with musical sound. And some of the things he felt that he wanted to write were not possible to be played on instruments that existed at that time. And so he was actually inventing instruments, some very weird instruments. And if he'd lived longer, it would have been very interesting to see what some of those prototypes would have turned into. I mean, he was working with Louis Theremin for a few years and collaborating with him. And this next piece is an example of what Grainger called his free music. And this was written for four theremins.
I think it's worth saying that the theremin, which was invented in 1928, this piece dates from 1936, the theremin is a kind of box with antennae, and you move your hands over it, don't you? Almost like a kind of faith healer.
Yeah.
And that changes the pitch of the sounds.
Yes, and Grainger was so interested in that way that you could move between the notes. And that was something he was wanting to explore. And the theremin, he felt, could do that in a different way to existing instruments.
Thank you. Free Music, number one for Four Theremins. And the performer there was Lydia Kavina. It's an extraordinary sound, isn't it? Kind of not quite of this world.
That's right. And Granger was very interested in sounds that were created by nature and ways to try and recreate that or attempt to do that.
I mean, in that way, he was quite like Cage or Stockhausen, yes. who sort of said, just listen to the sounds around you. I mean, one thinks of 4 minutes, 33 seconds of silence, for example. Well, next on this eclectic playlist of your own, Catherine de Kell, the shuffle button thrown up, Owen Branigan, a celebrated opera singer, I think especially in light opera and operetta, born near Newcastle, and with a notorious sense of humour. And it gets full rein with this satirical Tyneside song, doesn't it? And I'd love to hear you just letting us hear some of the lines, possibly.
Well, it's funny because I've known this song all my life. My dad sings it, and I was at a school, junior school in North Shields, in a quite a rough area of North Shields. And I remember at school we all learned a load of Tyneside songs, and we did a little performance of them. And there was one girl had this song, The Neighbours Doombalar, it's called. And I'll never forget her. She was up on the stage and we're all dressed up and she had this pinny on and she was obviously modelling herself on some model of Tyneside femininity, and she just had such character. And of course with these songs the children could all sing in their native accents, you know, so they were really giving it some stick. And Owen Branigan's doing exactly the same, and he's, you know, he's loving it.
Would you like just to give us a couple of lines before
we hear?
Oh,
I could probably recite. You're brandishing a piece of paper at me. I don't need the paper. I know it. I'll tell you the Deans are some of the folk that live in our neighbourhood. There are a lot of lazy good-for-nouts and most of them's far for good. And all this, it's a song about neighbours borrowing from each other. And, yeah, don't get me started, otherwise I'll try and sing the whole thing and then we'll have no need for Owen Branigan.
And things whenever the pot's to boil. They'll ask for half any candles if they can get paraffin oil. But if they borrow, they'll never return. Such folks are never sad. The skin are wrapped for its hide. In fact, well, the neighbours don't be lad. I'll tell you the Deans are some of the folks that live in our neighbourhood. They're a lot of lazy good for nouts and mess of them far for good. From Sunday morn till Saturday night, the cadge and eat and deer. In whatever they borrow, they'll never return, so you might as well hire it away. Oh, they'll borrow your onions, leeks and peas whenever the pot's to boil. They'll ask for halfpenny candles if they can get paraffin oil. Whatever the borrow will never return, such folks are never sad. The skin are act for its hide, in fact, the neighbours don't be lad. Does Mistress Jones set up a gob and asked is what I meant? Cause I wouldn't lend a half a croon to help her to pay the rent. I've lent her money a one afore, but I'll never deed again. For she carries a hot heated fiery fuel and she hit us with a stain. Oh, borrow your onions, leeks and peas whenever the pot's to boil. The lacks for halfpenny candles if they can get paraffin oil. Whatever the borrow will never return, such folks are never sad. The skin rat for its hide and fat, the neighbours don't be lad. I started a shop, but oh dear me, of that I soon got sick. It was like a clock that wan and gan without its favourite tick. The mainspring broke, the clock was then hoid out into the street. I often said the clock would gan if the neighbours were had they read. Oh, they'll borrow your onions, leeks and peas whenever the pot's to boil. They'll ask for halfpenny candles if they can get paraffin oil. Whatever the borrow will never return, such folks are never sad. The skin a rat for its hide in fact, the neighbours don't be lad. The neighbours don't be lad.
Owen Branigan singing the Tyneside song Neighbours Doon Blah, with Gerald Moore playing the piano, and recorded in the early 1970s. Your father used to sing that song.
Oh, he certainly did, yes, yes.
And he's still singing, and in fact, didn't he go on tour with you recently?
He did. Yeah, that was a interesting experience for both of us, I think. So
I'm fascinated by this childhood, which sounds really wonderful in the way you were able to absorb this musical world that had been passed on by tradition. So did you tend to play the fiddle or the pipes?
Well, I would play the fiddle more with other people, and some of the older shepherd musicians that I was learning from, they tended to live quite in isolated areas that was difficult to get to. So we would quite often communicate by sending each other cassettes. There was one old fiddle player, Dick Mosscrop. We had an ongoing communication for about 10 years where we would, you know, I would be at home, and if I learned a new tune, I thought Dick would like it, then I would record it onto a cassette, and then eventually after a month or so, the cassette would be full of tunes and I'd post it off to him up in Bellingham, and he would do the same for me. And occasionally we'd meet up and play tunes together. And so the cassettes were a way of communicating when you couldn't otherwise.
Do you, when you're playing, tend to stick to something which has been quite carefully worked out or even notated? And to what extent do you improvise?
Traditionally, there isn't... We don't improvise in the way that jazzers would understand. For traditional musicians, you know, there's a certain tune, and the improvisation is all to do with the ornamentation, the phrasing. It's very, very minute little things, you know.
So it's more like Baroque music.
Yes, I suppose it is.
With a figured bass or something like that, you'd actually stick to certain things, but the way you decorate it would be.
And also the ornamentation, it depends on what area you come from. So, you know, I should be able to recognise if I heard an Irish fiddle player playing a tune from Shetland, I should be able to, without knowing the tune or the player, I should be able to tell you that's an Irish fiddle player playing a tune from Shetland. You know, maybe I should even be able to tell you, you know, if it was a Scottish fiddle player, I should be able to tell you if they're from the borders, the west coast, the northeast of Scotland. You know, there's a lot of different styles, and the ornamentation is one of the things that... It's like your accent as a player.
You've continued the tradition of being in a kind of musical family because your partner's a composer, isn't he?
That's right, yes.
Augustine Fernandez.
Yes.
Professor of Composition at Newcastle University.
Yes.
And I think he actually introduced you to this next piece because you told him you wanted something really brassy.
Yes.
You sure got it.
Well, I did. I mean, I didn't have a formal musical education, and so my knowledge of classical music is... there's huge gaps in it, but I quite like that because I don't always go for the most obvious thing. I find things that I think might be obvious and then you discover they're not. So I said to Augustine, what can I listen to? Educate me, you know, give me a piece that I'm going to like. And he said, well, you know the Janáček Sinfonietta, of course. And I said, nope. And he put it on and it had been waiting for me, that piece. I'm interested to see which version you're putting on as well, because another interesting thing for me was that I loved what he played me. And then when I was choosing stuff for this show, I listened to a few different versions. And it's amazing how different they sound with the different conductors.
You know, we've gone for the Charles McCarris one,
right,
because McCarris introduced a lot of Janáček to this country.
Right. Well, let's have a listen. Thank you.
Music from Janáček's Sinfonietta, the first movement, and he had 25 brass players there, giving their all in a performance by the Vienna Philharmonic, conducted by Sir Charles Mackerras. And because it's Mackerras, I don't think the Vienna Philharmonic were being over polite.
No, they're sounding quite raunchy there, actually.
He liked that. He wanted that very raucous sound. And actually, interestingly, Janáček's kind of language very much came from the kind of syntax of Czechoslovakian folk music, rather like Bartók did with Hungarian music. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how it's permeated, you know, composers like Granger, Janáček, Bartók, Vaughan Williams. We're moving now to a solo performance, but again, of a rather extraordinary kind. Catherine, all of the pieces you've given us are not necessarily what you might expect.
I like to be interested in something and to be challenged by something, and I would rather listen to something that I didn't like that interested me, and I might never want to listen to it again, but I'd rather have that experience than listen to something that was okay and you've heard it 1,000 times before and there's nothing there that challenges you. I like the experience.
Well, this completely challenges the whole way that a piano works, because John Cage's Sonata No. 5 for, as he put it, prepared piano requires the player to spend quite a lot of time, actually, inserting screws, bolts, nuts, pieces of rubber between, on top of the strings, and there's even a need for a bit of plastic and an eraser. And there's a diagram to show you where to put them all. And I remember talking to Joanna McGregor, actually, about this, and said she spent half her rehearsal time just preparing the piano. But what is it about the result that you like?
Well, when I first heard this piece, I didn't know anything about it. I think if somebody had told me what it was, I would have thought, well, that sounds a bit pretentious. But actually, when you hear it, it just sounds like a great piece of music. It really swings. You could play it to anybody.
It's like the theremin, isn't it, that it explores new sounds. Mm. This is like a sculpture in sound.
And also, you're thinking, what is it? What is that sound? And it's, you know, it's something you've not heard before, but it works.
I find it very exhilarating. It almost out-electronics electronic music.
Exactly, yes.
And I don't think he meant it to be funny, because some of the other pieces are very much less rhythmically driven, aren't they?
They are. I mean, I like that one because it has the rhythm and you could play it to musicians from many different genres without telling them what it was, and they would react positively to that.
John Cage's Sonata No. 5 for prepared piano, performed by Rolf Hind. And by the way, details of all of today's recordings are on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. I get a sense that you really enjoy, Catherine de Kerl, the process of musical discovery. And this next piece, I think you discovered as a result of simply glimpsing the name of a Brazilian woman.
That's right. I was doing a little bit of research to put a programme together as part of the Rest Is Noise festival that was on, looking at 20th century music. And I embarked on one of those mad kind of Google searches that just, where you're following leads and just finding yourself discovering things that you'd never heard of. And I saw the name Chiquinha Gonzaga, and just the fact, first of all, the fact that she was a female composer made me notice her, because there aren't so many of those, and certainly not at that time, and certainly not in Brazil. I mean, she's born 1847, and the more you read about her and find out about her, she is just, it's like there should be a, in fact, I think there is a television series about her over in Brazil, but there should be a huge kind of feature film about her. She was born illegitimate, mixed race. She broke all the rules, you know what I mean? And so her father, rather unusually, recognised his paternity and recognised her, provided her with a family and siblings and an education, an arranged marriage to somebody very well-to-do. So you would have thought she's done very well for herself. She's been very lucky. And old Chiquinha wasn't having any of it. Her husband, she got married at the age of 16, and she'd loved music. She'd been educated in music as well. And eventually the husband was saying, look, you've got to choose. You can't be going on playing the piano and the guitar and all of this sort of stuff. It's me or the music. She chose the music, which meant that she was then disowned by her husband and also her parents, you know. This was not acceptable behaviour for a woman at that time. So she was forced to go and try and make a living from her music. And she is just quite inspirational. Whatever problems she faced, and quite a few of them she created herself, whatever problems she faced, she really faced up to them and came up with quite radical solutions to them. For example, she was working against slavery and things like that. So she went out selling her music, sheet music, door to door to raise money to actually, she bought the freedom of a slave musician at the time. And she also, what else was it? Oh, she was one of the founder members of, I think, the world's first copyright protection society. And it's an association that still exists in Brazil to protect, you know, authors, musicians, playwrights, to protect their intellectual copyright, which was something that wasn't done at the time. And she was writing vocal pieces, chamber pieces, orchestral things, and just little popular songs as well, and achieved the status of folk heroine in Brazil. And this is one of her earlier pieces. It's just so lovely.
It's called Atraente, which I gather in Portuguese means sexy.
Thank you.
Luciano Suarez performing Attraente by Gioachina Gonzaga. And she was almost 90 when she died in 1935. It's quite remarkable.
Yes.
I gather that piece began life as a kind of improvisation.
Yeah.
Perhaps a prerequisite of being sexy.
But the thing I like about it as well, I mean, this is a woman of immense strength of character and determination. And yet that piece has got such an innocence to it and a cheekiness to it.
It's got a kind of Scott Joplin, Eric Satie-like quality to it,
yep.
doesn't it?
Yep.
It doesn't pretend to be anything serious. It's just enjoying itself.
That's right.
Well, another, to us, relatively obscure piece of music now, Catherine Tickell. I mean, that was as the result of a glimpse name in a library. This, I think, is another piece of detective work because you were actually looking for an Armenian composer, weren't you?
I was, and they're folk songs from Armenia collected by Komitash Vardapet. And I remember finding the pieces and thinking, right, who is this Komitash Vardapet? Let me find out about him. And again, just finding it very difficult to get to the bottom of who this person actually was, because that isn't the name he was born with. Vardapet means he was a priest. He was ordained as a priest, and that's what Vardapet is. Mm. And also, he wasn't the composer of these pieces. He collected them and...
And then, like Granger, realised them in his own image.
Yes, yes. Oh, and then I programmed some of these pieces in a concert at the Queen Elizabeth Hall, and it was players from the Royal Northern Symphonia were playing them. And, you know, the players were liking the pieces, and I was really pleased with them. You know, I thought the pieces were sounding great. And we finished the concert and went backstage. And somebody from the Queen Elizabeth Hall came and introduced me, said, oh, you know, there's some people here to see you. And looked at them, didn't recognise them. And they said, Catherine, we're from the Armenian Embassy in London. And we came along to say thank you for programming these pieces. It was so lovely. And they were so delighted that this music was being played, and I'm hoping that it's going to be played more and more. I mean, I'm not saying I discovered him or anything, you know, other people obviously have been playing him, but I don't think it's as much in the repertoire as it should be.
Well, as an admirer of Komitash Vardapet, Catherine Tickell, you're in good company, because Claude Debussy, after a Komitash concert in Paris, declared that he should be recognised as a great composer. Let's hear two songs now from his Armenian folk song collection, Clouds and Folk Dance.
Thank you.
orchestral arrangements of two songs from Komitas Vardabet's collection of Armenian folk songs, and we heard Clouds and Folk Dance. Konstantin Orbelian was conducting the Moscow Chamber Orchestra. This brings us to an interesting point about ownership, Catherine Tickell. Do you feel that, for example, the music that you play and collect is your music? Is it somebody else's music? Or is it somebody else's music realised by you?
I think I'm very lucky to have grown up in a tradition that I can call my own, and I feel very much part of that. But I do think that that gives me a lot of strength. I feel completely able to mess with the tunes that I've been brought up with. I think I have the right to do that. And if other people don't like it, they don't have to play my version. They can go back to the original. I think it's very important to have respect for where the tunes come from and to be aware of where the tunes come from. And I think if you do that, then you can change them.
How healthy do you feel this tradition, which you're now so steeped in, how healthy is it now? Are there other people like you coming up?
Absolutely. And there are organisations like Folkworks, based at the Sage Gateshead, that have been doing a lot of work over the last 20-odd years to promote these traditions. And also lots of little kind of community bands, like there's a Cayley band near us, the Tarsac Cayley band that my partner and my daughters go to, and I do as well when I get the time. And it's fantastic. You know, my partner's from Bolivia, and he's coming and he's playing in this community, like all different ages, all playing together, and he's learning the tunes of the area in which he now lives. In fact, there was a wonderful thing happened happened not this new year, but last new year. When I was younger, we always used to go into the local pub in the village and play music on New Year's Day. And this tradition had seemed to have died off for a while. And last year, my dad had said, oh, come on, let's have a few songs and tunes in the pub again. And I took my daughter, who would have been about 8 then, and I made sure that she knew the Warkesburn Waltz, which is a tune specifically from that area. And it was one that I used to play with my uncle. He used to play on the accordion. And it was we always did that one. It was a classic, you know. And my uncle hadn't played the accordion for many years. And I went to pick him up, made sure he put his accordion in the car, took him down there. And we played. And, you know, there was my daughter, age 8, my uncle in his 80s, all playing this tune, the Warkesburn Waltz. And it's made me tearful just thinking about it, actually. And rather sadly, it made my uncle cry at the time. To see that continuing into a new generation, but also thinking about all those years gone by when we played that tune together, it was just a good moment.
Well, for your final choice, Catherine, you've taken us back home and a poem in Northumbrian dialect, which, in fact, you set to music. It's called The Corn Fiddler. And that's not an instrument, is it?
It's not. It's an agricultural implement. But the reason it's called a corn fiddle is that it's the action of scattering
bowing
the seed
almost,
is like the action of bowing a violin. And you're saying I set this to music. That's a grand title for what was actually me just playing along. I had a recording of Alan Wood, who wrote the poem and who's reciting it here. And I just played a drone. He seemed to speak in B flat. So I played a drone of B flat on a viola all the way through, and then just improvised different layers of fiddles and violins whilst listening to the voice. And I never edited any of it. It was just whatever I did, that's what went on. And I did the whole recording in my living room, looking out on the Northumbrian landscape. Don't expect to understand it. It's in very, very strong Northumbrian dialect, but he's kind of thinking about when he comes at the end of time, if he goes up to heaven, you know, which he hopes he's going to. But basically, he's saying, do you know what? You can just dangle me down on the end of a rope and I'll bring life and seed to the valley. That's all I want.
Catherine Tickell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We's the king of the fiddlers, what Monarch now sits on his throne. Born hour late, man alluded to it. gaily I fiddle the loon. What music's the game this fiddle I play? Sings the owl but a rattle and zoom. Put sweet tunes in the heat, cast life to the seed, dancing jigs on the corn, a room. Each stroke to your stride, 5 yards wide, bow swinging for your singing, she says. Corn for the laird, and corn for the haird, and corn for the cushts and crabs. We's the king of the fiddlers, we again to fiddle me him. Fain be the heart would have to support just me, and me fiddle again. Me buttes filled the sail, and hindered me toil, fair pinging and ringing we sweat. We shoot us, ye see, boon chaff and bear, but then, or take her a mint. Me dusk and arm throw, hips black and blue, what's left of a man for a try? I miss dear strife, I'll mind our me life, cause a fiddling king am I. And when I'm deeds, broken wings through a hoop, I can dangle my doom on the end of a rope, I'll spread out this valley we spring. Heavenly grace, tighten me lace, here comes the fiddling king. I'll hum through the trees like a bee on the breeze, hear my gun whistle and bow. Corn for the laird, and corn for the haird, and corn for the gamecock and cow.
Catherine Tickell, Michael Barclay's guest in today's Private Passions, with Corn Fiddler from her CD Ensemble Mystical. The producer of that edition of Private Passions was Elizabeth Burke for Loftus, and you can find out how to download the programme and others from the series from the downloads page on the BBC Radio 3 website. Next week at the same time, Michael Barclay's guest is the artist and creator of Spitting Image, Roger Law.